Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and sitcom buddies. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow We Who Remain, John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
Let me be the first to say that we were wrong.
Or
so wrong. Well, and now I think we will.
We'll talk about it. Guy Inglis is also here. Hi, Guy.
All I had for an opening joke was a one who blah, 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 like the one who laughs or the one who remains. So I had a joke around that, and you robbed me of it. So
yeah, but it was Dan this time.
I know. Because.
I hate to tell you, Guy, it's because I know everything. I've seen it all.
Up until a certain point.
Up until right now. And of course, we're pulling back to pulling double duty because we have not only the season finale of Loki to talk about a little bit later in the show, but first we have the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow, season 6, episode 9, This Is Gus. Boy, that title did make me laugh, I will say. They're back on their title game. Love it. And here with an abbreviated recap is Guy English.
I swear to God, it's abbreviated this time because my notes stop about halfway through. I watched it last night. I didn't take any notes, and I told myself I would watch it this morning and like take notes while I was whatever doing other stuff, like breakfast. And then I slipped in. So I've been trying to write down notes from what I remembered last night in between actually trying to earn a living.
I hate to have to send this to HR. I mean, Guy, I mean, just the written warning for not finishing your work. This show takes things seriously, okay?
Anyway, I did want to rationalize it by saying I want to spend a lot more time on Loki this week than this Legends ep. This Legends ep is all about it's Bayrod's birthday, and he's somehow convinced that the gang is going to surprise him, but they don't realize it's his birthday. And they end up on the set of Bud Stuy, his favorite sitcom growing up that sort of formed his character. And it's another sitcom ep, which is hilarious that Nate just says it's another sitcom mission. Perfect. Like a little tropey. So good. So self-aware. Like the characters on the show effectively act like Bayrod, like he's channeling them, their personality. And the premise being that the show gave him the freedom to laugh at the things that were pertinent to him. And that's what the showrunners are doing. They're making jokes that speak to them. And the alien mystery of the week falls to Earth, but Spooner manages to shoot down the pod and it crashes into the studio where they're filming Bud Stuy, and hijinks ensue as we get Alf, I guess, or dinosaurs. It's basically Alf.
Assume that's, mixed with Gizmo from Gremlins.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Anyway, so we get like Alf comes on the show, and everybody, or like the studio audience and people, start enjoying the alien more, which brings the show away from being about people like Bayrod with their lived experiences and more about this goofy alien gag. And so as this transpires, he starts to turn into a real uptight sort of jackass, basically, because he didn't have that formative experience in his life. Song and dance, basically. Who cares? Like, there's no notes. I have no notes on this. I'm just making up as I go along. Blah, blah, blah. Ends up, Nate, they cast Nate on the show, and Nate ends up cracking a joke and taking the alien away. Ends up being like one weird episode rather than like a recurring thing that happened on the show. And the show goes back to being normal, and then Bayrod ends up being normal again. Meanwhile, in our B Mick plot, Mick's daughter is Preggers and puts him into a real tizzy. Ava tries to calm him down by saying she's still in school and all this. And it ends up, he goes to kill the guy who brought him alive, which is no good. But it ends up, the resolution is like, the kid's a good kid. And whatever. He's just happy that his daughter's with somebody who's a cool guy. And then we find out that when Mick and alien lady were getting freaky in the tube, she impregnated him with her tentacles. Those aliens are weird. They are weird aliens.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, and at one point...
got to check that first. Practice safe alien sex.
Safe alien sex, yeah.
Yeah, at one point... God, what's his name? This is what I get when I don't even write notes. I don't even remember names. Alien nerdy guy.
Gary.
Thank you. Gary starts asking him, like, were the tentacles involved? And I read it as, like, he was being jealous.
But yeah, I think they wanted, yeah, that was the, I think that was the point. You were supposed to think that he's upset about it. Instead, he's nervous.
He's concerned for the life of Mick, who is now pregnant in the ear somehow with a brood, which never, that's not a good word.
It's not a good word you want. Yeah, exactly.
No. And that is my incredibly half-assed review of Legends.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, it was.
I think it hits all the points, and now we can talk about it.
Yeah, I will have one plot detail that didn't.
Is it going to be the one that I'm going to add?
Was about the one about Zari.
No.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I totally blanked on that. Yeah,
yeah. We get Zari. Yeah, Zari 2.0 realizes that she can go into the totem and let Zari 1.0 out, and as long as only one of them is out at a time, everything is fine. So Zari 1.0 gets to come out and celebrate Bayrod's birthday and be with Nate.
Gives him a big kiss.
Yeah, which I am looking forward to because I think she does such a great job of portraying those two.
It blows my mind every time.
Same person, but she does a great job.
Yeah, every time I see
two different characters
bouncing back and forth between those two.
That was great.
It's great.
That was really well done.
Fantastic.
Yeah, like they do it on the Flash too, but not to as great.
This is
effect.
More. Yeah, in
not,
some
not
ways
that
this
she's
is more.
Worse, it's just it. The characters are different.
It's more subtle, right? Like, I think in The Flash, a lot of times it was, like, over the top, right? You had Tom Cavanaugh playing, like, six different versions of Harrison Wells, and they were all caricatures.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking of Caitlin. Caitlin and Snow are kind of, like...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty
They've
good.
Converged a little now. Like, Snow is, like, less a jerk, basically. Right. So they've got more similar personalities. But,
right. Yeah. But it's still, like, they have very distinct looks and everything, too.
Yes.
Whereas, I think Zari... 2.0 and Zari 1.0 are very subtle differences, but they are like they're both fully fleshed out characters, which is what's wonderful about it.
Yeah, right. She did such a good job in that scene. Really did. Yeah. I mean, if the show had had more budget, they would have split screened it instead of doing the over the shoulder.
They had like one shot where they were split screened and it was pretty good. But yeah, well, then they're like, yeah, clearly saving the money.
Yeah.
The thing that I was going to bring up was the car chase with the golf carts.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Yes. Which also
I thought was delightful. I mean, just they spent a lot of time on it, which I thought was interesting. Like,
well,
it goes on for a lot longer.
It does all the chase tropes, right?
It did all the chase tropes. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That was wonderful. Astra has some great moments in this episode, pretending to be from labor relations and just being her. And then, like, she gets attracted to Bayrod when he turns into a jerk. There are so many good bits in here. I wrote down the
puppeteers union is hilarious. Yes. They just because the guy immediately craps himself and he's like, "Oh, it's not a puppet." Like the puppeteers union just swings such a big stick that he's immediately like scared of them. It's awesome.
I loved the there are so many little things in the episode I really enjoyed. One of them was I love Bayrod and Gideon's relationship, especially because she calls him B, which is pretty funny. Like everyone else does, but I enjoyed that. There's a bunch of great quotes in this episode, like them talking about the writer's room because he pretends to be a PA at one point. He's like, "You do not want to see how the sausage is made."
They go to Vancouver too. And they crack some, not home, it's basically home.
It's
very familiar, you know, territory for them. And they call it Vancouver and, what was it? Oh, Ava goes way off on this.
It's like
weird...
the third largest, like, metropolitan area in Canada.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to figure out what number two is. It must be Montreal. It's got to be Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver.
Yeah. It seems likely. Zari's comment, "I knew you had leading man hair in you," like when Bayrod shows up with all the gel.
Yeah.
The fact that the episode with the alien is titled First Contact High everything about that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Nate, was it Nate's comment who says, is this for the CW when he's recording his audition?
Yes.
Excellent. Zari's dig, finally a win for straight white men when Nate gets cast instead of her. And then when Nico has the conversation with Mick at the end, and he said something about like, oh, you know, it wouldn't do for the author of post-feminist literature to be murdering his daughter, his boyfriend, or something like that, which was a nice tip of the hat back to Mick's romance writing career. I thought that was fantastic. And then at the very end, Gideon puts in a laugh track over all the final part when when they realize Mick's prince. Everybody's very upset about it.
I kind of forgot, like I said, I watched this late last night, like right before going to bed. How did the Nico Mick thing resolve itself? Was that just entirely off camera?
Yes. Okay. They show up like he's going to kill him, and there's like, what? Are they hugging? You know, like.
Right. Okay.
Which is great.
I thought I'd skipped a scene somehow, but okay.
No. I thought that was fantastic because that is your natural assumption, right? With, you know, Sarah's like, I'm an assassin. I know what happens when you're really interested in all like their details and personal habits because you're out to kill them. But I like that they undercut it immediately with him just being like, yeah, he's fine. I'm just glad he's, you know, taking care of your kid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, as always on this show, it sets up tropes and then undermines them. Like, similarly, where Bayrod is like, you know, you guys got me this for my birthday. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, totally. And then when they're watching the show and the alien crashes in, he's like, this feels less like a surprise birthday than more like a forgot my birthday and it's actually a mission.
But the other thing about this whole episode, well, I mean, not the whole episode, but most of the episode focuses on Bayrod. And, you know, we've said this before, but he's a character that they just they injected at the end of a season and then took off with and have done a really good job with it.
Yeah, yes. They really have. Yeah, this, I mean, it's a hilarious episode. But again, like, I think the reason we like this show so much is that it's got heart. Like that, the notion of them making a TV show for people like Muslim stoners, I guess, is like, that's a pretty specific niche market. Not that there's not a lot of Muslims, but like stoners are not. It's an interesting
It's a very weird overlap.
It's an interesting combination. That's all.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great because they actually took a goofy premise at like an alien sitcom, and they still managed to do some thoughtful, you know, heartfelt stuff with it, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was, I think the most hard to believe fictional thing on this show potentially is that they could get that sitcom on the air.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I mean, I love it. I love the idea. And I frankly, you know, why isn't there a sitcom with two Muslim leads, right? Like,
also remember that he grew up in the future.
Yes, it's
right?
In the future. It's so, like 20 years in the future, right?
Yeah.
So you can kind of be like, oh, it took us 20 more years to get to that point. And yet the set for that show still looks like it's Friends.
Still looks
right?
Still doing Friends. It really does. Yeah.
Like 90s, like 90s style sitcom jokes too. Like
they didn't spend a lot of money. I mean, they did that with the game show, or reality show. They updated a bunch of different things. They made it work that way. But this one, they just were like, nah, it's fine.
I think if they'd done it in a way that was out of our time, we wouldn't have read it as a sitcom as instantly as we did, right?
No, I think that makes sense. And I think they hand wave it, and I think that's totally fine, in the same way that when Bayrod is like gushing about how important the show was to him and like, you know, set his life in the right direction and everything, and the guy's like, you must really like being a PA, because like I'm thinking that whole time, like, wait a second, he's in his like late 20s, early 30s, he could not possibly have been watching this show. This show as like an influential, like, to me as a kid show. But they're like, you know what, we're not going to worry about it, don't sweat it, just deal with it and move on.
That's the thing. Like, we cut them a fair amount of slack. I mean, you know, and again, in this episode, I think Zari 1.0 is catching up on all the stuff that's happened, and she's like so Sarah's half alien. I was like, actually technically Sarah's dead, but anyway, whatever.
I think it's good that they can sort of, you know, in the fact that it's a comedy and a superhero show at the same time, I feel like I'm willing to cut them a lot of slack on things like plot, right?
Yes.
I think
yes.
they do a great job with what they have, but like,
yeah.
it's not what's important about this show, and that's no, fine. Right. Like, you, if you right. tried to do it all, you know, I think you would miss the mark, and you'd lose what yeah. makes this show special. But honestly, yeah. at the end of the day, the plot is fine, but it's the character interactions and the humor that make this show really sing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to sacrifice one or the other, you sacrifice plot every time.
Yeah.
Speaking of time travel,
on this show at least, you know. Sorry, go ahead.
Speaking of time travel, if we had gone back to, you know, to ourselves when season one of this show was airing and said that this would be one of our favorite shows,
we'd say, "Oh no, the timeline has been disrupted." Quick.
Well, yeah, maybe that's what happened.
Somebody, yeah, I'd be worried about like
somebody yeah. somebody flashpointed us. Is that what happened?
Uh-huh.
Some kind of nano robot doppelgangers from the future came back and trying to trick us. Man, season one was awful. Like it wasn't just like
tomorrow.
It wasn't just like it didn't find its footing. Like it was standing in a pile of crap. Is where like it was bad. Just bad conceptually.
I keep thinking I should go back and rewatch it just to see how bad it was. But right? I also don't want to.
I know. I don't know if I told you guys. I did think of that for. Like a member special or just like when we've got like a week, we'll just go maybe. I think I thought let's watch the whole season and then had the exact same reaction you did, which is like, A, I don't want to do that. So there's no way I'm convincing them to do that. So
we can rewatch the pilot.
Yeah. Maybe the pilot. Yeah. Or like we'll pick the best of them or something. Okay. Whatever.
There's no best. It's not.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the pilot in the last one. Who knows?
Oh yeah. Just erase everything in the middle. It's not important. The beginning is the end. There you go.
Well, which one does Hawkman get killed in? Because I've watched
that's the
again.
Last one. Yeah, yeah, just that scene. Oh my god, the Hawk people, so bad. All right, let's do a rating, shall we?
Yeah, sure.
Guy,
this is a Biff from space.
Oh, Biff from space.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good, fun, goofy, silly episode with heart. I dug it.
Indeed. Yeah, John.
Yeah, it's a future token Biff.
Is that token or token?
Token. T-O-K-I-N apostrophe.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll round that out. It's a golf cart chase full of tropes Biff. It is. Yeah, it's I think we covered it, but like it was hilarious. I laughed a lot. Part of the reason I think like Guy, I didn't take a lot of notes in this episode was I was just enjoying it. Like. Yeah. And I think the case ends up being when I enjoy a show and it's not one that requires deep analysis, I just sort of want to kick back and have a good time. And then occasionally write down lines that I think are really funny is mainly the thing. But yeah, this show continues to deliver and that's great. I know we were worried a little bit in the early episodes of it this season, but I think it has showed over the last three or four that it really continues firing on all cylinders, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, agreed.
So good. So next week we will be back to recap episode 10. And this season, I think, it's in the teens, I want to say.
I think you're right.
15. Yeah. So we still got like six episodes to go.
Yeah. Do you guys want to maybe do Black Widow next week too?
Potentially.
I don't want to promise anything, by the way, just because. Have you seen it yet, Dan?
Yeah, I have. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I thought so.
Well, let's do it right now, then.
Just shove it right in the middle. Screw you, people who care about spoilers.
Whatever. I don't want to promise anything, but I think honestly, it's not that it's difficult to talk about Legends for a whole hour, but at some point you just devolve into recounting the jokes, and honestly, they're better on the screen. Just go watch the show if you're gonna do that.
So we'll leave that as your recommendation. All right, let's shift over. To talk about the finale, season finale, as we learned, of Loki, and I'm on deck for this. So here we go. This is going to be a little bit longer, but I will try to keep it short. We open with a superimposed over the Marvel credits, a whole bunch of clips from all the different Marvel movies, which then transitions into us sort of zooming out of the universe, hearing other clips from notable people. And then ending up eventually on this asteroid in the middle of space in a potentially another universe. It's a little confusing, where we find Loki and Sylvie at the manor that we saw at the end of last week. They are about to kick the door in when the door opens, and they are step into this mysterious house and are quickly greeted by Miss Minutes, who welcomes them to the Citadel at the end of the time. and where they will find He Who Remains. And Miss Minutes pitches them an idea. Basically, instead of doing this, why don't you, we've made a way so that you two can go back to the timeline and be together on the timeline and get all the stuff you wanted. Loki can win the Battle of New York and get the Infinity Gauntlet and etc. And Sylvie can be really happy and have all the memories that she missed out on during her life. It's going to be fine. He Who Remains can arrange it. But of course, they turn her down because it seems too good to be true. Meanwhile, back at the TVA, Renslayer is grabbing a bunch of files, and then Miss Minutes pops up there and basically gives her a bunch of files that she didn't want, but that he thinks will be more useful, which kind of confuses with her. In the manor, they come into a room with a ticking clock and a bunch of statues, one of which is broken, which felt a little bit like the Timekeepers, but it's kind of unclear. A door opens, and we are greeted by He Who Remains. The actor is Jonathan Majors, who you may know from Lovecraft Country. He's really good.
Every time I look at him, and I'm like, I think in my head, John Major, the British Prime Minister, who looks nothing like this guy.
Yeah, he's got range.
Yeah, really.
He's a real chameleon, that guy. Yeah. Anyway, he's awesome.
He's really good. So in the elevator, Sylvie keeps trying to kill him, but he keeps time looping out of the way to her frustration and welcomes him to his office, which has a little bit of a Doctor Strange Sanctum vibe going to it. Back at the TVA, Mobius has returned from the void and confronts Renslayer and basically says, like, we got to take down the TVA. She is not thrilled about this idea, but he points out that they know her secret now. Which we see B-15, who he has apparently let out, is in Ohio in 2018, is tracked down by the Hunter D-90, and who is about to basically take care of her when into this high school office walks none other than a variant of Renslayer, who appears to be the principal, which really freaks out the Hunter. So back in the manor, Loki and Sylvie sit down with He Who Remains and have a very lengthy conversation that basically deals with the fact that he knows everything that is going to happen, because obviously he set up the TVA and basically paved the road for Loki and Sylvie to get to where they are. Again, sort of trampling over this idea of free will, all of this was sort of laid out for them. And he tries to say, like, this basically is only going to go one way. But he's also simultaneously trying a little bit to, like, drive a wedge between them. A lot of dynamics happening in this scene. Back with Mobius and Renslayer, Renslayer is convinced that basically the only person who actually gets to have free will is the person who's in charge. Mobius tries to stop her, basically fails, and she walks through a portal in search of free will. In the manor, He Who Remains basically says he needs to continue existing because without him, everything will get destroyed. And we get his backstory, which is that he is essentially originally from the future in our one of the timelines, our Earth, I guess. And he learned in which he learned about the multiverse, and all the other versions of him also learned about the multiverse. And they all were, like, really happy at the first and sharing information. And then, of course, it turned bad and they went to war and basically started destroying everything. The first variant located Eliath, the monster we saw last week. And weaponized it, which ended this multiversal war. And as such, he's just basically spent the rest of the time carefully curating the timeline and preventing further branches, thus creating the TVA to sort of handle that. His pitch essentially to them is, I'm the lesser of two evils, because if you think I'm bad, the rest of me are worse. And so he offers them basically the opportunity to lead the TVA in his stead. Or alternatively, if they're going to kill him, you know, basically everything will be thrown into chaos. One of the great lines there, and there are many in this scene, as he sort of, you know, they give him a hard time about all the bad things he did. He says, we're all villains here.
Yeah.
Which is kind of on the spot. But as he waits for their response, he becomes uneasy and then announces they've crossed the threshold, at which point he no longer knows what's actually going to happen. And the timeline is starting to branch again. Therefore, they have to make a decision. He takes off his temp pad. Sylvie goes after him. Loki stops her. They have a really big fight going back and forth. Loki thinks they need to, like, consider that he's telling the truth. She thinks he's lying and or doesn't care. And then they, you know, sort of have a confrontation where Sylvie accuses him of wanting to basically the throne and run the TVA, and it was all a con. And another great line at this point where she asks him, why aren't we seeing this the same way? And he says, because you can't trust and I can't be trusted. She almost great takes line. Him out, but Loki interposes himself in front of He Who Reigns and throws away his sword and basically says, like, in his own way, I love you. They kiss. She kicks him through a portal back into the TVA and then stabs He Who Remains, who says it has a particularly creepy departure as he says, see you soon, and then winks as he dies. And she appears to maybe have some regrets about that. Back at the TVA, the multiverse is
branching. Yeah, it's
that
thing where you think you win, but the guy you defeated is overly confident, and you're like, uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
And also just nothing happens, right? Like, she clearly expected, like, this, I'll stab him, and it will all end or something, but she's just left sitting there with a body.
Well, things do happen, because the timeline
yes,
starts.
Yes, but not where she is. She is not seeing that. You can see it outside, but it's not like something cataclysmic happened to her in that moment.
Right.
At the TVA, everything is branching. Mobius and B-15 are watching it and saying, essentially, there's no turning back now. Loki, who has been sitting there sort of dealing with his angst over this, gets up, starts running through all the hunters who are being set out down to the archives, and he finds Mobius and B-15 basically talking about everything branching, and they're not sure what to do. He confesses that they freed the timeline and that they found the guy behind it and says, like, everything bad is going to happen. We need to get ready. Mobius sort of says, well, like, you're an analyst, right? And then we have a chilling moment where he says, what division are you from? Who are you? What's your name? And Loki looks over to see that the statues of the timekeepers that he remembers is actually just one statue of He Who Remains. And then we have our
looking real caggy.
Well, we'll get there. And then we have our post-credit scene where it confirms that a season two is coming. So we should broach Kang first. This character clearly seems to be Kang the Conqueror, a well-known Marvel supervillain / sometimes, like, so essentially the character who exists in multiple incarnations in the Marvel universe, some of whom are good, some of whom are bad, most of whom are pretty powerful. He's never named in this episode, but he does mention Conqueror a couple times. And his backstory is pretty much Kang's backstory.
Yeah, calls himself a jerk, too, at some point. I've been known as a conqueror, something else.
Anyways, there's a lot packed in there. But John, you mentioned up front that we were wrong. I mean, Kang had been floated around a couple times, but I think we all assumed he might be the Mephisto of this show, where it's like a character we all thought was going to show up and then, didn't. And we had all our theories about who was actually behind all of it.
I mean, not to try and save our bacon, but in a way, he's not really, I mean, he doesn't become, he sets up the conflict, right? But the conflict isn't with him. It's between the two of them. And also, you know, with Sylvie internally.
Yeah.
And which is why I enjoy the ending, because I think if it, you know, if it had just been like, oh, here's Kang and you've got to fight him and whatever, that would have been less satisfying. Whereas with this, he's like,
he's a catalyst.
You do what you want, right?
Like, he's just spurring them into action.
Either way, I win, or you know, either way, either nothing happens. I return to power here, or I get what I want. So, I think it works pretty well. The thing, I was a little before the mid credits bit. I was a little disappointed because I was thinking, oh, they're just setting up the movies. That's like, there's, you know, like, they didn't really come to like a big conclusion here. All they did was like punt this, and now we're going to have to watch the Doctor Strange movie to figure out what's going to go on or whatever. But when I saw the reveal for season two, I was like, okay, that's good. That's like, because if a regular TV show that was not in a huge universe did the same thing, I would be fine with it.
Yeah, I had the benefit of watching it after I had seen the mention that it had been renewed, so I knew that going in. But I definitely agree with you. Like, if I had been left with that scene with Loki looking at the statue at the end and Mobius not knowing who he was, I'd be like, wait, what? There's so many like threads here that you have not like resolved in any way. But it makes a lot more sense when you think about it feeding both into the movies and into the next season.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and I don't mind it feeding into the movies to some degree, but I don't really like, I don't know. I mean, I want these things to at least have some sort of self-cohesion in terms of storytelling, like that you can watch them without necessarily having to know absolutely everything else that's going on.
I think there's going to be a lot of permeability with these because I think that's what they're doing. That's kind of their goal, is we're making a immersive universe that jumps back and forth between TV and movies and potentially, who knows, other media too.
Yeah. But you could watch, you wouldn't know who the characters are. You couldn't watch WandaVision without knowing who the characters are at least a little bit. But that story is fairly self-contained, even though there are elements that continue on after it. I mean, like the end of Buffy, you don't know what Buffy's going to do next. And she's sort of set up to do like a whole bunch of different things and you never find out what it is. So you have that question at the end of it's okay to have a question at the end of a show. Yeah. Not everything should be tied up, nice and neatly, but you also don't want to leave like 20 different things up in the air.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Sopranos and Mad Men does that too. Like they kind of wrap a bunch of stuff up, but you're left with like, what's Draper doing with his Coca-Cola commercial?
But at the same time, I think what's interesting about this has been true for the Marvel Universe for a long time now, which is you can see some of these things in vacuums, but increasingly it becomes difficult to, right? Like you can't walk into Infinity War and be like,
yeah,
I'm good. I can just jump right in here. You're going to be really confused. No. And that's kind of what they're building, right?
Sure as hell can't do that with Endgame.
Oh, yeah, like, either, right? Like, I think that's
no
true
sense
with
at all.
I think that's increasingly true, as they are kind of assuming that everybody who's jumping in this has a certain degree of fluency with it. And I think that's like, we're building something a little different here than perhaps, movies have been done in the past.
Yeah. And so I guess it's not the fluency that I am as concerned about. It's just that the story, has a beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
Yeah. And this doesn't really, it has a beginning, middle, and end in terms of like, whether or not she's going to complete her mission of destroying the person behind who screwed up her life.
Right.
But there's so many other things that are not resolved.
Sure. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That having a second season is definitely warranted.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, for sure. I think, I don't know, John, I was saying this to you or in our group chat, not that I don't like you, Dan, but if you hadn't, I think it was one of those times that you hadn't seen it yet. So John and I would share a few thoughts.
You should have just asked for the room.
We took the room.
We just took it. We just left you in a room and went to a room for ourselves.
That's fine. I got my own room. I don't need you.
Much better room. I forgot what I was going to say. One of the reasons that I kind of didn't want it to be Kang, or I didn't want it to be a big bad, was because I think we all wanted the conflict to be one of character, and it had to go towards his character. And a big bad guy with a blue face showing up and, twirling a mustache and being all wacky, it's not satisfying. Like, what do we learn about anybody there?
Right.
But instead, like you said, Dan, he's a catalyst. He brings out the conflict between our two protagonists. I was going to call them heroes, but protagonists.
Yeah.
And in fact, that he puts the power in their hands is scary as hell, right? Not for us, the viewers, but it is, when you're hell bent on destroying something that you find fundamentally, abhorrent, right? To be given the keys to that, literally the keys to that castle, is a scary moment, right? Because you're like, well, what could I do with all of this power? Like, I could be a good god king. And it was interesting. And that's, it makes sense for Sylvie not to trust Loki. And I really loved, and this is where I think Kang did work here, is that that line that you recounted, where she says, or he says, that you can't trust anybody and I can't be trusted. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of introspection there, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever thought that I think he's always known that about himself, that he can't be trusted, but he's never said it in such a pained way. because mm-hmm. he really is trying to convince her. Like, he really, really is. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not BSing you here. I really don't want to be the king. I don't want to sit on that throne. I don't want any part of this. But if you do this, we're in trouble. Like, yeah. things are going to go
there's,
bad.
There's an inversion yeah. and not just a reflection happening here, right? Where it's like, you know, fundamentally, this is what is differed in these two people's lives, right? They came yeah. after her early, and so she never had safety, whereas he had the safety and kind of used it as a luxury to, like, taunt
and
torment
it.
People. Right, yeah.
I mean, exactly. that whole thing with Thor, when Thor loves snakes, that weird, that funny scene. And he loves snakes, or he picks up the snake and he's all happy, and then Loki turns back into Loki and stabs him, and it's like, that's weird. But that is entirely it. It's betraying Thor's trust, you know? Like,
we were eight.
Yeah.
And ultimately, Loki is hoisting his own petard there, right? Like, he's like, I've spent my whole life lying, and this one time that I really, really, really yep. need you to know that I'm serious,
yeah,
I can't.
Right,
I've expended all of that capital, and I'm
right.
Yeah,
right.
I can't
which
do
is,
it.
Yeah. Which is so great.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, it's a tragic moment, and it's yeah. really, I think, executed well in that regard, because what I thought was fascinating was that he is very, up until this point where he sort of steps in, he's incredibly deferential to her in this entire yeah. episode, right? He mm-hmm. sort of realized, like, I'm just going to, she's on her mission. She's got this thing she needs to do. I'm going to take a step back and let her, you know, do what he's putting her literally ahead of himself. Yeah. And up until that last moment, right, where he realizes I can't let her do this, not necessarily because it's bad, but because in the end it will blow back on her in some way. And right. I can't handle that.
Right.
Yeah. And he's not even sure how. I mean, they can't.
Right.
They can't know. All he knows is, like, it's revealing when he goes to the end and he sees Mobius and he's like, this guy is scary as hell. Like, it's.
Yes.
He's terrifying and he knows everything. And yeah, it's.
You know, he honestly believes him, right? Like, he believes right. what everything Kang yeah. has told him. And that is scary. Yeah. It's a terrifying moment. I think, you know, you put it well when you're talking about the, like, somebody giving you all the stuff you wanted, right? It's always, that's the natural suspicion, right? It's the same thing when Miss Minutes gives them the offer early on. Like, you can have yeah. everything you wanted. And it's like, well, we know they're going to turn that down. And you yeah. also know, part yeah. of you knows, like, well, if they're offering this to me, it's because I'm, you know, I've gotten too close, right? Like, I'm actually a threat if I've gotten this close.
So right. I am curious about that. And Dan, I saw your tweet earlier about plot holes. So this is a giant plot hole.
I'm going to walk away.
Just for the record, Dan had a tweet that's like, I think it was like,
Stop talking about plot holes,
and they're not like, people don't know what a plot hole is. It's yeah. not actual plot hole.
Yeah.
Which is whatever. I don't understand the offer that Miss Minutes makes. And then we go to Kang or whoever. And he gives them a different offer, like, kill me.
It changes a couple, like, times, and I think there's multiple things happening here.
Because it doesn't make sense to me. It's like, why try to buy them off? Is that a test? Like, if they got bought off, he's like, well, fine. I guess they weren't worthy of taking my position.
Well, like, he knows.
What's his motivation? Is he really just tired and wants to resign? I mean,
well, okay, so a couple things. I get it. In theory, yeah. he knows they're going to turn it down, right? Because he knows everything that yes. happens until that point. And so I think in some ways he mentions at one point that he has looked for a long time to find the right person to take over. And I yeah. think this is a matter of him sort of cycling through timelines and trying to figure out what is the point that gets me to that point where I can actually, you know, step back or whatever. And some of that is sort of a test, but I think it's also just like, maybe there was another timeline in which something very much like this happened, but they did take that offer or something. And who knows, he might have even double crossed them and then, you know, erased them at that point. It's unclear. I mean, we don't really know all the mechanics of what he's doing.
Right. And you can't, because he's omnipotent, basically.
Yes. Within this.
And like, sphere, so it yeah. may yeah. even be that, like, having.
He's also a little, you know.
Oh, he's back.
Not
he's,
well.
He's thank you for. Yeah. He's gone a little.
He's not. Yeah.
He's gone a little nutty. Like, yeah, as he would yeah, at the end of time.
Right.
Being,
right. You know, he's. Yeah. Yeah. When you have that level of control and you can manipulate practically everything, you probably start to question a lot of things.
Oh, sure. Well, and the other important thing to remember here, there's a couple things happen. One, as I was rewatching this, I noticed like he tells them at one point there's only one way this can go, and then like 5 minutes later he's like, well, actually, there's two ways this can, right? Like he keeps changing his story a bit,
right?
And
I
think that's instructive, because also throw in with that the scene which I had forgotten until I rewatched the second time with Renslayer at the beginning, where Miss Minutes shows up and she's like, "These aren't the files I wanted," and she says, Miss Minutes tells her, "He thought these would be more useful." So he's still manipulating events, right? Even as they're coming, even as Loki and Sylvie are confronting him, he is essentially working like a parallel agenda with Renslayer, whose deal we do not know at all, other than she has her own goals of like maybe running things. It's a little unclear.
I don't know what her whole deal is really. But
well,
season two.
Put it in the back pocket for season two.
Well, I believe her point when she says the only person who has free will is the person who's in charge, and that something that she has in those files suggests that maybe, I don't know, like almost like a fail safe. Like he realizes, okay, if they kill me and all the variants, you know, come and start the war again, I need to have like this, you know, ace in my hole somewhere that I've secreted somewhere and given somebody this information that might help avoid total disaster. I don't know. Totally a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Or she's instrumental in him starting his loop again, right? Because he says something about being reincarnated. Also, which is weird, because he gets killed and he says, "I'll see you soon." And he's been talking about reincarnation. But is that a variant? Like,
well,
I assume so. I assume that's a different
version. If you think really hard, it starts to break your brain a little bit.
Because he's still dying, right? And so, I mean, I don't want to die, even if there was somebody exactly like me. Like, I'm still.
But he also,
I don't want to get into the Star Trek transport conundrum.
The trick with this is trying to figure out where, like, how the timeline works, right? Because his implication at one point is like, look, I started in the 31st century. I'm a lot older than you know. I've lived like a million lifetimes or something like that, right? So like, in theory, it's that he went back probably, or was like living in various out of time pockets and stuff like that. And I think his point at one moment, he says something like, all of this happens again and I end up back here. And it's suggesting to me that a version of him, the same version of him, will like happen again and then go through everything that led him to being like in charge of the TVA in the first place. But it's weird, right? I agree, because it's like we don't entirely understand how the temporal, you know, mechanics work here.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. I don't.
It's fine.
I don't expect to walk into a room with Kang and no temporal mechanics inside out. Like, it's going to be weird for sure. So, but it did, I suppose, confuse me as to his motivations, which, A, he's a little off his rocker.
Right.
Like, quite a lot off his rocker. So immediately his motivations are difficult to discern. Mm-hmm. And B, on top of that, we got all this weird timey-wimey stuff.
Right.
So,
He also, like, I mean, throughout the whole thing, he seems to be, he's bargaining a lot. Because even when they just killed those androids, one of the androids says, you know, Sylvie, we can talk about this. And even from that point on, it's just like you don't know how much it's just acting, you know, it's just an act, to try and get them to not get to the end point, or if it's deliberate setup to keep them curious or whatever it is, you don't exactly know, but he does bargain throughout the whole, you know, final arc of this.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So first of all, he's evil. Like, he's definitely, he's got to be the most evil guy. He enslaved that Galactus, or whatever, you know, Galactus from Fantastic Four. Whatever, what was that thing called?
Eliath.
Thank you. Yeah. So he enslaved that, and he had it destroy all the other timelines, which is like, I don't know, trillions of souls, right?
Yeah.
So that's no good. He's clearly bananas, and he's saying there's more evil people than him. I don't know. He seems to definitely got the most blood on his hands.
Well, I mean, comparatively, we don't know, right? Like, that's the thing, is we don't know what the alternative looks like. And I think I find fascinating his conversation with Sylvie, where she's like, you know, essentially you're just killing all these innocent people, and he tells her to grow up. Says, like, look, it's not personal, it's practical. And like, I enjoy this because it's okay. So I think I've said my theory that almost all plots can be boiled down to like maybe one or two different like moral quandaries, and it's, you know, the good of the few outweighs the good of the many, or that other way around. Good of the many outweighs the good of the few.
Or
it's okay, man. So long as we get a Star Trek reference, there you go. It doesn't really matter or if the it's one, accurate or not.
Or alternatively, the ends justify the means. And he's kind of making both of those arguments to a certain extent, right? He's saying, I did all this, but I did it because the alternative was worse. The problem is we don't know really, and I think we're about to find out what exactly the alternative was.
Right.
Right. So why did he, was he really, okay, obviously we don't know, but do you suspect he really was just bored?
I think he was tired. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, because bored is different than tired. I wasn't sure what you're,
he can live forever and he's tired, but he's, it's a weird, because he literally undoes his life's work. Like, his millions of years of life's work has been to create and prune this timeline, and then he just gives it up.
He's not stable. I mean, which is like one of the things that I like about that performance at the end. In a way, I wish there was a little bit more of it, because a lot of it is so funny, you know, so jokey, lighthearted. I wish I had seen a little bit more like angry, like, rocketing back and forth between the two.
I imagine we're gonna see
I think the last of him.
And I think that this whole thing opens up, you know, which should be fun, is like a lot of different the ability for Jonathan Majors to play this same character in a lot of different ways.
He is incredible. I did not want to see Kang. Like, when the doors open, I'm like, okay, Jonathan Majors, that's awesome. Like, I knew he was going to be an Ant-Man, and I kind of suspected he'd be in here, but I was kind of hoping not. Once he starts talking, and he's got a Wizard of Oz wackiness to him, I'm like, this is delicious. This is amazing. And he's funny, and he's kind of like, when he dodges the blade in the elevator, I guess, and he's just lying on the ground behind her. Like, it's not like he teleports behind her and he's all threatening or anything. He's just being a goof and eating his apple. And I'm like, this is great. Because when you told me if you told me that we would have got Kang, I would have been like, oh God, not another Thanos. Like, not that I don't like Thanos, but I mean, I really don't need a heavy, you know.
You got to go in a different direction.
Pontificating, philosophical. I don't want that in that show. I want to learn about our characters. And the way they played him, amazing. Perfect.
This moment at the beginning when he sees them, right? Which is like, it's almost childlike in its glee. He's like sitting on the bench in this way that's like kind of small. He's like hunched in a little on himself. And then he's got like sort of a glee to it. Like, he kind of is all over the place. And I agree with you. I like that performance a lot. It's such a nice counterpoint to someone like Thanos, who is like you said, a brooding, you know, thoughtful hero or whatever. Like, I have no idea how they are going to spin this out, like, and what they're going to do. But there's so many different ways you could go, and that performance is so dynamic that there's so many different aspects you could play with.
I cannot wait to watch him with Paul Rudd.
Oh, like, God. That. Yeah.
It's going to be wacky. Also, if you haven't seen him in Lovecraft Country, guy is built like a brick outhouse.
He is a big dude, and
he's a very robust man,
and he's great in that. And having seen him in that, in which he does mainly a more dramatic side, it was just great to see him here doing a total, like, night and day, totally different performance, which is fantastic.
I haven't seen him in a lot of stuff, but I didn't know he had this in him, and he is amazing. Like, I think we all agree that our favorite scenes in this show have been the talkie scenes. When Mobius and Loki are just chatting, or Renslayer and Mobius are chatting. And this was a pretty talkie episode.
Oh, yeah.
All things considered, for a season finale of like a big budget Marvel show, they just had a chat and it was great. And he sold it. Like, he carried this episode, really. Like, the way he set it all up, the way he did the exposition.
This is a guest star appearance that deserves an Emmy.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. So just for background, if anybody,
here we go. We don't have to go. With you. Yeah.
Well, no, it's like it's relevant because Carl Lumley was amazing in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. He did not get an Emmy nom, but Don Cheadle did, who was in it for, apparently somebody timed it, 98 seconds. And when asked about it, Don Cheadle just says, "I don't get it either," which is, I love
not,
Don Cheadle.
Not the way to win the Emmy.
Yeah,
for
sure.
No, no.
So it's clear he doesn't think, you know, like he doesn't.
No, I honestly don't think he wants it at that point.
Yeah,
That's insulting. Like, right. Come on, he's an amazing actor. He's done a lot of amazing things. There's no way he wants to win for that. That's just stupid.
And he doesn't need it because he's proved himself to be an amazing actor.
No, he's Don Cheadle.
Right? He's awesome. Don Cheadle. He doesn't need an Emmy for that.
Right.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. But he'll get his chance. He's got his show coming up at some point too.
That's right.
So
everybody gets a show.
So here's my other thing. This maybe this is delving into Conspiracy Corner. And I know John didn't bring the portable corner with him necessarily, but we'll make it work.
I did not. I don't have it today.
It's fine.
You just strapped a corner to the top of the car. Portable.
Like, I got to open a drawer, but it doesn't really have the same.
It's tight fit in here.
Yeah.
It's a TARDIS drawer.
So I think, and I had already sort of started thinking about this point earlier, but I think now I'm 100% convinced that What If is canon. In the sense that now all the timelines have branched.
Yeah.
Now we're going to see all of them, which I think is.
Oh, that's what I was trying
fantastic.
To say earlier.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. So what I was trying to say to John in our text was that, Loki season 2 makes a lot of sense in that I think it will be what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Was kind of trying to be, but they, you know, basically didn't communicate, is that Loki can and will interact with the movies a lot more. A, it's all in-house. And B, because it's this time travel stuff, it's way easier to sort of fit them in and go along with whatever's happening on the, you know, the big screens.
Right. And and we've discussed in the past, many of the upcoming projects have a multiversal hook. So I think this is something that fundamentally alters the character of the MCU, right? You know, if we're dealing with the Spider-Man movie or Doctor Strange or whatever, I think it opens up a lot of possibilities. Plus, I mean, Kang is himself, his backstory is intertwined a bit with like the Fantastic Four, right? Isn't he in some incarnations?
He's
a Reed Richards descendant. And so
Nathan Richards.
Yeah. And so if you're going to bring in Fantastic Four, which they are still planning to do at some point in the undetermined future, that could be one way to incorporate that or other elements of the canon that you haven't been able to fold in yet because it didn't really make sense.
Yeah. Right. I mean, before long, we're going to get the Mandalorian versus Wolverine. So,
I mean,
please
do
that.
I'd
watch it, but I mean, what is that? Yeah. It'll be fun popcorn, but I mean, what's that saying? Like, what's the point of doing that? You know, but,
The worst is when, it's Wolverine and, Captain Picard, like literally Captain Picard, because we folded that in too. Oh man! Oh,
God. But and finally, we get Enterprise versus a Star Destroyer.
They don't own that one yet.
Not yet.
And not as of 4 o'clock on Thursday.
Yeah,
afternoon.
Yeah. Don't but speak too soon. They're gonna bury that in Friday Night News. Oh, by the way, we bought everything.
We bought everything.
We bought it all. It is. I think I'm fascinated, even more fascinated than I already was to see What If, because I think depending on how they handle that, like, it is just a fascinating way to explore all these really, not only the fun ideas, but tie it in with the larger canon at the same time in ways that could be unexpected and fun. So that's fascinating. And I think the multiverse is just an interesting concept. We've seen it executed on, you know, the CW TV shows. They've played around with it a lot. I think with varying degrees of success, and I don't know. I mean, I feel confident that if anybody's going to mess around with this, Marvel can probably do a good job. We've seen it into the Spider-Verse as well, right? Like, this is a concept that people are very familiar with now, especially superhero fans. So I don't think it has the same curve it might have, you know, if you started off doing this like 10 years ago. I think people are okay with dealing with the complexity of that now. But it certainly opens up a lot of storytelling possibilities that I think could be bring a lot more creativity and interesting ideas.
Yeah, we've come a long way in the past 20 years. Man, that what a trite, boring thing to say. But
mainly in superhero media is what we're focusing
on. What a boring observation. But X-Men 1 in 2001, that was pretty straight up action-y kind of movie. Like, they're wearing biker pants and all that, you know? Mm-hmm. And now we've got, like, trippy multiverse stuff going on, and everybody's on board.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think there's been concerted effort to sort of...
generally good.
Yes, I mean, hurt, right?
It's the quality that I think that makes it...
Yeah, and people are game now. Yeah, people are willing to come along for the ride, which is, pretty fun. I think if you'd shown some of this to, people back in the day, they'd be like, this is too trippy for me. I don't understand. Like, the opening shots of this one are mind-bending. Like, we get, Contact, like, the going down that, looks like
the black,
2001.
Black
like
holes
the,
and stuff.
Like, all the black hole stuff, mm-hmm. flying between universes, going down the timeline.
There's a show that's just about Loki. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
It's the only one that's gotten two seasons so far. The other ones were intended to feed into movies as opposed to feeding into a TV show. And Kevin Feige's even said this straight up. Some shows won't.
I think that's okay.
I think it's great.
They had the room for, Falcon the Winter Soldier had his problems, but they had the room for a story that was about like him taking up the mantle, instead of just going with what happened at the end of Endgame. Let's flesh that out a little bit and talk about the questions around that. That didn't necessarily do the best job, but I think that they were absolutely right that there was room for that story there.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, otherwise it would have just been Flying Cap. Yeah. Shows up in the next movie.
And they could have done that. And if you didn't watch the series, that's what it's going to be like for you. And it'll probably work fine.
But if you want to explore that or figure out the more nuance and details, you can watch the show.
Yeah. I mean, and you could do and same thing with WandaVision. Like,
sure.
That story does not need to be seen, I don't think, in order for, I mean, I guess the Vision part, if the Vision shows up and he's White Vision, you might be a little bit confused, but.
Well, I mean, he was dead.
If she starts off
the next movie talking about her dead kids, imaginary kids, you might be a little lost.
But you can do it
in such a way that it doesn't feel like required reading necessarily.
Well, they're going to have to do some exposition to Doctor Strange anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're going to need to explain what the shtick is.
Well, somebody comes from another universe, and you have to explain your universe to them. So,
yeah.
See, okay.
Start at the beginning.
As somebody suggested, all the timelines should be narrated by Luis from Ant-Man.
Yeah.
It should just be amazing. Yeah. So, there's this woman, and she's made an invented a reality.
They do such a good job of that. Yeah. It doesn't get old, either.
No, it's really good. It's really good. A lot of stuff happening, and I'm excited. Now, we have a surprisingly large break before What If, which I think debuts on, I want to say, the 11th of August?
It is the 11th. I just looked it up.
Yeah, so we've got almost a month between now and then, and we don't know yet what the following, show... We know the two shows that are basically in post-production at this point are Ms. Marvel and Hawkeye. I'm going to guess that Hawkeye would probably show up first, mainly because it's like the other ones. It's a continuation of the previous stuff, whereas Ms. Marvel is a brand new character. So I think they might hold that.
It also will track from Black Widow.
Right, well, exactly.
Will track, but I mean, it's
a connection
of a type.
There, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see that. Mm-hmm. And then, there's a bunch of stuff due next year, obviously, but plenty more stuff for us to talk about. No shortage. Yeah. We'll continue with our Legends coverage, and then we'll...
Maybe Superman?
We'll probably at least talk about that when the season's over.
Louise, I'd like to call
her. And just to make our life difficult, I believe August 12th is when Stargirl Season 2 starts, so... Look forward to a potential double duty again, depending on how we decide to handle that.
Yeah, we might do. Yeah,
it's an embarrassment of riches, friends.
That's right.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of like doing two because you know, one's not that interesting. We don't need to vamp it up for, I mean, not that we need a show for like, I keep sounding like a complaining about stuff, but I mean, you know, having two means that we can spend time where we're most excited, I think, you know? So,
Yeah. But what are we going to do when we need another hour for Critical Race Theory?
We're going to do a spinoff podcast.
Okay. Sounds good.
Be prepared for that.
Three white guys talking about Critical Race Theory.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to get banned in all 50 states. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Can't really win that one, huh?
No. Like, people who legitimately want to hear about Critical Race Theory do not.
Half of the states will ban us because they don't want anybody hearing us. And then the other half will ban us because we're white guys.
And
you know what? I can't disagree with that conclusion.
No. Yep. It would be entirely correct for everybody to do that. Well, for that half of it, at least. For anyway.
Sure. That's not what we'll be doing. We'll be talking about more superhero stuff, and we'll be back next week to do it. But until then, I'd like to, of course, thank my compatriots for being here. Oh, wait. Do we do a rating? God, I didn't.
No,
oh,
yeah, I was just
saying. Yeah, really. Somebody stop me.
Jeez,
I was about to sign off as Biff Conklin. So.
All right. I take all of that back. Let's do a rating, although I think it is perfunctory. So,
yeah.
John?
It's a biff, and the season is a definite biff, and I look forward to season two, which I'm going to go ahead and pre-rate as a biff.
Nice. Smart. Bold choice.
It's because he knows everything. He's seen it all.
That's right.
He's at the end.
Man.
Guy?
You know what? Biff Conklin is a Kang variant. That's my theory.
That would explain some things.
Speaking of sentences that make zero sense to anybody who hasn't followed this show.
Yeah. Wait, does somebody... I'm not going to explain the
no,
rating
please
system.
Don't.
I saw somebody wanted me to explain it the other day. I don't care. Some other time. Biff for this episode, and, you know, Biff all around for the show. I think we had a couple of weak ones in there. I didn't like three. I think it was three.
Yeah, that was the weak. That's the weakest one.
I'd say it was the weakest one, but I still liked it.
Yeah. I liked it, and the penultimate one last week didn't jazz me as much as I kind of hoped. But you know, and then Jonathan Majors walks in. Wow, nailed it. I mean, not that everybody wasn't great, but I mean, it was basically three people in a room for most of this episode, and that's awesome. And they did a killer job. Yeah. Really, really landed it well.
I'll round out the biffs and a biff for the show. I agree with everybody. Episode 3 was my least favorite, but there was still stuff to like in it. This show, there's a lot going on here, right? Like, when you went in thinking, oh man, Owen Wilson, that's a pretty big name. And then you get not only also Jonathan Majors, but also Richard E. Grant thrown in there just for kicks for like an episode each. You're like, man, this show is loaded. I mean, plus, you know, Gugu Mbatha-Raw as Renslayer and Wunmi Mosaku as B-15. Like, this is a deep bench for a cast. And if anything, I will say, as much as I enjoy watching Loki and as much as I enjoy watching Sylvie, I feel like, man, I kind of want more time with these other characters because I like them a lot too. And I think I want to learn more about them. Well, so we'll see next
season two, baby.
Season two. Right.
Yeah. I'm glad they are coming back. I'm glad there will be another season to pick up on this, because I think there's a lot of stuff left there to talk about.
Yeah. Man, I want to see Richard E. Grant and Jonathan Majors.
Oh boy. Some sort of like battle royale happening there.
Yeah.
But I would watch it. It would be good TV. All right. Now I can officially say that we all sign off and we'll be back next week. And of course, I would like to thank my fellow Lokis for being here. Guy English, thanks for being here.
Thanks, man.
John Moltz.
For all time.
Yeah, always. John Moltz, always a pleasure.
I am not remaining.
Wow.
I don't know.
Who knows where we're going with this? Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Thank you for sending in the letters. You can always hit us up at biff@theincomparable.com or at BiffCast on Twitter. Of course, we have some Loki t-shirts still available. Go to cottonbureau.com and search for BiffCast, and you'll find some wonderful shirts that can get you ramped up for season two when that eventually comes around. But, you know, we'll be on to other stuff in our next show. And thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And we'll see you next week.